Hello, everyone. I am Sergeant Major of the Army, retired Dan Daly, and welcome to this edition of Soldier Today podcast. Today, we are flipping the microphones, and I have the distinct honor of interviewing the founder and former host of Soldier Today podcast, Sergeant Major of the Army, retired Ken Preston. Ken Preston has served our Army for over three decades, culminating his career as the 13th Sergeant Major of the Army. And for the past 6 years, Ken has continued to serve our soldiers and families as a member of the Association of the United States Army Team. Today, we have the unique opportunity to tap into those four decades of experiences. So I hope you enjoy this edition of Soldier Today podcast as we talk with SMA retired Ken Preston about a variety of subjects. Ken, I never thought I'd hear myself say this, but welcome to the Soldier Today podcast. It's great to have you in the studio with us.
Hey, thanks very much, Dan. And, you know, it's an honor for me to be here and to support you. And I just want to say congratulations as well. As you kind of now transition into this role, and there's no doubt in my mind that, you know, you're going to take AUSA now to a whole new level. And it's really about communicating and staying in contact with our soldiers out there every day.
Well, just like in my previous job, Ken, I got big shoes to fill of the legacy of the people that served before me, as I do here. I really credit Sergeant Major Preston for working hard and really bringing the enlisted focus to our association. And he's done a great job in the last 6 years. And we're going to tap into some of that today as we ask you a few questions about your experiences here, and maybe some questions about leadership, and maybe we'll find out what Ken Preston's going to do in the future, too. So let's jump right in, if you don't mind, Ken.
Sure.
And I'll start off with, for over four decades, you have served our nation as a soldier. And for the past 6 years, you have continued to serve our soldiers and families as the vice president of the Association of the Army. What made you want to be part of this organization?
You know, Dan, it's as I think back, I mean, that's a very good question. As I think back to, you know, my time in uniform as I was transitioning from the Army, and, you know, for Karen and I, with the kids grown and married and off themselves, you know, our intent was to go back to the farm, get the farm up and running, look after mom and dad, you know, my father-in-law. So as I told everybody, when I left the Army, I demoted myself back to private, and I went back to the farm to get the farm up and running. And you know, I had the opportunity to do a little bit of stuff out there in the civilian sector. You know, I spent some time with Homes for Our Troops, which was a very heartfelt opportunity for me to continue to serve and support our Army and our soldiers. And when General Sullivan, who was the president and CEO at the time, asked me to come to AUSA, for me, it was an opportunity to continue to serve and to continue to give back. And, you know, when you spend so much time in uniform, it's really about service and serving our nation and, you know, serving our young soldiers that volunteer to serve every day. And for me, this was an opportunity to continue service.
Yeah, that's true soldier for life. You know, as any soldier, and even more so as a sergeant major of the Army, is you're never really done with serving our soldiers and our nation. So, well, thank you, Ken. Now, you've been here for 6 years, and you have had the unique opportunity to watch and actually develop NCO and soldier programs and how it changed over time. Can you share a couple of the highlights of the changes that have occurred in NCO and soldier programs here at the Association of the United States Army over the past 6 years?
Sure. You know, as I think about what has taken place here within AUSA as an association, it's really a wonderful experience. And there's a lot that's happened over the last 6 years. You know, when I came in 6 years ago, I was the director of NCO and soldier programs. I came in behind Command Sergeant Major retired Jimmy Spencer, great Command Sergeant Major, you know, Ranger Hall of Fame. You know, he was a great person to come in behind. And of course, I had worked with him for my entire time as the Sergeant Major of the Army. And so I knew a lot about what he did already. And coming in, it was, really was an opportunity to communicate with our young people out there, to help build that rapport with what I call our emerging leaders and our young professionals. And it was really the non-commissioned officers and soldiers. And of course, a couple of years into that, General Hamm came in to replace General Sullivan. And I thought somewhere in that period that I'd be transitioning. I'd go back to the farm and, you know, continue to work on, you know, getting the business up and running. But General Hamm was very adamant that he wanted me to stay. And, you know, it was just not long after that, he really wanted to do more for non-commissioned officers and soldiers. And I was elevated to the position of vice president for NCO and soldier programs. And as I kind of talked about, you know, the role of the vice president, as I told you how I really wanted to do more for NCOs and soldiers. And when you look at 80% of the Army out there across all three components are enlisted volunteers. And, you know, we had done a survey on, you know, what do young people, emerging leaders, non-commissioned officers, soldiers want from a professional association? And it's really, it's leadership, it's professional development, it's education, it's mentorship. And really, we wanted to do more for that demand from their professional association. So, you know, we did a lot of work to, you know, kind of stand that piece of it up. And it's been a wonderful experience over the last 6 years in total.
Yeah, and that was a great decision by our association president, General Hamm, to move you up there. Because just like our Army, as you know, Ken, being the Sergeant of the Army myself, you know, our soldiers need to be able to see that our enlisted leaders are at the top and have input to how the organization runs and have influence on that. I mean, you agree, right?
Yeah, absolutely. And you know, and you said, you know, what are some of the highlights of the changes that have taken place? And, you know, it's amazing that, you know, as we kind of focus on particularly leadership, professional development, education, mentorship, you know, what are the products, the educational products that we can provide to, as I call it, the young professionals? And, you know, when you look at the specialist, the sergeant, and the staff sergeant, those three ranks, those three pay grades, you know, over 68% of the enlisted force are at those three areas. So, yeah. So you talk about emerging leaders, you talk about young professionals. It's been a wonderful experience to kind of do more for the materials, the educational materials that we put out to support all three of them.
Absolutely. And Ken, you've done a lot, especially in the realm of NCO and soldier programs in the last 6 years. And our association does many things for all of our soldiers, officers, our civilians, and our retirees.
Yep.
In your opinion, what do you think is the most important thing that NCO and soldier programs does for our soldiers and our members?
Yeah, I have to say that most important thing, I mean, in the macro view, it's really about being relevant and it's about communications. You know, you have to really communicate. And when you look at the young people today, you know, you've got, you know, now Generation Z that we're enlisting.
Is that what generation we're in now? Is it Z?
Exactly right. You know, Generation Y was the millennials. Of course, they're out there. They're your mid-grade senior NCOs now. You know, when you look at, you know, what's the most important thing, it really comes down to leadership, professional development, education, mentorship. And, you know, of course, you know, we travel in support of all the 122 chapters of the association that are out there. And it's important out there, I think, that, you know, we support their local programs because they're the ones that are, as volunteers out there in our communities, they're supporting the local commands across all three components of the Army. So whether it's the regular Army, the Army National Guard, or the Army Reserve, I mean, it could be a small recruiting station. It could be a, you know, an ROTC cadre out there with a university. So it's really supporting their programs to promote professional development, education, leadership, mentorship.
Yeah, so it's really diverse what our association does for our members and our soldiers. But, you know, I want to touch on one point that you said there when you first started off, Ken, and that's communication. You know, we all know communication is critical to success at any organization, whether it be the military, the association, or even out there in business. And nobody would argue that. However, you know, I've heard much argument about what is the best way to communicate to an audience. And as you mentioned, we're in Generation Z right now, and they communicate differently than we did back when the boomers, or what I call the Pepsi generation, is I think that I'm from. Yeah. And there are so many different opinions out there on which method is the best. Now, you've had an opportunity to serve over three decades in the Army, and now 6 years here at the association. And what do you think is the best way to communicate to an association audience?
Sure. And, you know, there's lots and lots of theories out there. You know, you could talk about that from a leader perspective. You could talk to it from an association perspective. But in general, you know, my message really for all the listeners out there, particularly for those that are serving, those that are still working out there, you know, you got to think of AUSA as a universe of, you know, a very broad range of listeners and people who want to be part of our association. So not all soldiers, not all non-commissioned officers are young professionals. I mean, you've got those out there that are, you know, the senior NCOs. Not all of our young professionals or emerging leaders are regular Army. I mean, you've got the Army National Guard, you got the Army Reserve, so you got all three components that are out there. You've got, you know, the senior non-commissioned officers. You got warrant officers and officers who all have great interest in our association. And of course, the products that NCO and Soldier Programs puts out there really touches every one of those groups. Not everyone out there is in uniform or has served. We've got, of course, our alumni out there, the graybeards and those that are, some are retired soldiers, some are veterans. But, you look at, 52% of the Army out there is married. So not everybody is a single soldier. You've got families, you got single parents. So when you talk about communications, it's really about talking to all those different groups, and they all communicate, they all receive information in different venues. So in some cases, it's social media. In some cases, it's a written form of publication, whether it's a hard copy magazine. And in some cases, it's something online where they want something more in depth, more detailed for their particular interest, for what their association can provide.
Yeah, no, that's great. Now, I think they're right. There is no one way to communicate to an audience, especially one that is as broad as the audience of our Army and our association. One of the things on communication that you developed while you're here to get after a certain population was the Soldier Today. It's a periodical that goes out twice a week that really highlights some of the things that our soldiers do and information that would benefit our soldiers and our members. I know a lot of our listeners have either received or saw Soldier Today. If you haven't, I would encourage you to get on the mailing list for that. But Ken, I guess what is the question is, what other things does AOSA do to get their message out?
Yeah, that's a very, very good question. And, I'm just kind of thinking about how I would answer that question. And, if you look at, and as a master gunner, okay, so, if you look at, the role of a master gunner in a unit today. And, I look at a master gunner, I call them the linchpin to gunnery training proficiency. They are the link between a commander and a commander's vision for home station gunnery training and what the outcomes are for a gunnery density that's coming up. And they tie that in with the crews and the crew training that needs to be done to achieve those objectives. And then that's also then tied into the maintenance teams to ensure that the systems are calibrated to achieve the commander's objectives. So the master gunner in a unit really is a linchpin to gunnery training proficiency. So I look at our association. So the Association of the United States Army is really a linchpin to bring together the Army, to bring together our industry partners and professionals, and then to tie that together with members of our government, which, are the ones that hold the purse string. So this really then gives an opportunity for the Army to lay out their objectives, their goals for the future, and the direction that we need to go to have a strong national defense. You tie that with our industry partners, our industry professionals out there who have the technology that, can now understand the vision of where we need to go. And then, of course, the government, to come on board and support that vision and the direction that the Army goes. So I look at AUSA from a communication perspective. It's really about getting that message out. It's tying everybody together. It's really about being a linchpin. And then you could take it one step further and look at, AUSA not just as a national headquarters here within Washington, D.C. area, but it's also all 122 chapters that are out there. And they do the exact same thing within their communities. You've got, the command out there or those Army or military units, those that have an interest in the Army. And they tie together the community, the local governments, the Chamber of Commerce's, to find ways to best support not only the command, but soldiers and their families. And as you know, when you look at a military installation, we provide government housing for 25, 30% of our married population. So you have a large part of our, soldier population around these military bases that live in the communities. So it's important out there to find ways to better support soldiers and their families. So again, it comes back to, in overall, the Association of the United States Army is really a linchpin to bring all that together to support the Army, support soldiers, our Army civilians, and their families.
Well, that's amazing. Great response there by Ken. And you've also answered my next question already was, a soldier walks up to you, looks at you and says, why do we need a professional organization for the Army? And you heard from Ken Preston, there's great reasons why. And, you know, just to repeat is the phrase is they're the linchpin between our communities, the people outside our gates in the United States Army. But let's say that same soldier walks up to you, SMA Preston, and says, why do I need to be a member? What's in it for me?
Yeah, okay. So very good question, too. And I have these discussions all the time with our young professionals, our emerging leaders, non-commissioned officers about, you know, should I become involved in a Army or military or veteran organization? And not just AUSA, but in the aggregate. And I said, yes, get involved. Because it really is an opportunity that, you know, that will pay you back tenfold. You know, soldiers and leader-focused organizations are a great place to meet new friends, to stay active in your military and your civilian communities, and you get the opportunity to learn more about something of interest to you. So as a professional association, you know, the reason I say get involved with our association, United States Army, is, you know, you have like-minded people out there that share the same interests, looking for ways to make themselves better, leadership techniques. And of course, as you get older in the Army and you learn your profession, at some point the day comes when you have to leave and you got to transition back into, you know, the civilian workforce. And, you know, there's lots of opportunities out there to, you know, learn more about, you know, serving as a volunteer within your community, serving as a volunteer within your chapter. You get to work alongside our community partners and our national partners, those industry professionals that are out there. And all of these associations that you create, this networking of organizations in there now that you're working alongside, now that becomes your network. It really helps you define, you know, what's the next chapter in your life as you leave the Army and you begin that transition with you and your family. So the gains that you gain from going in and serving as a volunteer, I mean, that's one of those things that really looks great in a resume because, you know, when you fill out your resume and, you know, you're looking for things to put down there, it's not just your military career, but it's the things that you do above and beyond. You know, it's your educational opportunities that you have and the things that you do with your spare time. It says a lot about you as an individual. So, and then of course, the communications, the education, the mentoring, the fellowship, all those things are things that will, you know, greatly pay you back as a developmental tool.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, and a few years ago, just a few short years ago, the Army spent a lot of time answering the question, is the Army a profession? And you mentioned that before, is you take these professions out in the civilian sector, doctors and lawyers and those who are considered to be professionals. Every single one of them has an association too. And we concluded that the Army is a profession. And I think our association brings that level of excellence to them with all the things you described, the education, the communication, and being part of that professional organization really helps you as you journey your Army. You do your journey through the Army, plus after you get out, like you said.
Yep, exactly right. And you know, one of the things I had the opportunity to do, you know, when I was leaving the Army as the SMA, was I, you know, we were just starting this whole discussion about the profession. And General Dempsey at that time was a TRADOC commander, and I did a white paper, and that's really this whole philosophy about, you know, being part of an association that really kind of resonated with me. And when you look at professions and what is a profession, and whether it's the medical community, the lawyers, the engineers, you know, it's being around like-minded people sharing things that are important for your career development, your professional development. And I think that, you know, that's one of the things that over the last 6 years, I've watched the Association of the United States Army really become more relevant to the individual and helping them become a professional.
Yeah, no, well said, well said. So I'm going to shift gears on us here a little bit and trying to move in to capitalize on some of the knowledge that SMA Ken Preston has achieved over the last four decades. So you've had the opportunity, SMA, to witness firsthand four decades of change in the Army. Can you share with us some of the changes that you've seen over those decades and maybe highlight a few of the things that may have not changed as well?
Yeah, so as I kind of think about it, You know, there's been a lot of change that, you know, and really it comes down to technology. It's
And just to put it in perspective now, so what year did you actually join the Army?
Yeah, so 1975, a long time ago. Ooh. And
yeah, it's...
And, you know, as I tell everybody, you know, I was a senior in high school, probably February of my senior year, knowing that I was going to graduate in 4 months. And, you know, reality sets in. You know, I was a great baseball player, but, you know, reality sets in that I'm not going to get a scholarship to go play baseball at one of these colleges or universities. And, you know, I didn't have the grades. I mean, we were a very small Class C school. I mean, there was only, you know, a little over 800 kids in the whole school. That was kindergarten through 12th grade. So I wasn't going to get the academic scholarship. And, you know, being the oldest of four children, you know, I looked for other ways to make myself a success. Because, you know, when I turned 18, you know, in February of my senior year, I knew that, you know, when I graduated, I wanted to step out into the civilian workforce and be independent on my own and not rely on my parents. And so the Army was one of those things that I looked into. And I was very fortunate that, you know, I knew that both of my parents had served. My mom was in the Air Force. My father was in the Army, both, you know, Korean War kind of era veterans.
Yeah.
And, you know, and while they didn't talk a lot about their military service, there was a few little stories here and there. But I knew that the service was one of those places that, you know, I could always go to. And obviously it was a very, I could see the product of my mom and dad and what it did for them. So the Montgomery GI Bill was very promising at that time. It was obviously the Vietnam era Montgomery GI Bill. And my intent was to, you know, go in the Army, do my 4 years, get the Montgomery GI Bill, get out, go to college and become an architect. And kind of follow in my father's footsteps. He was an architectural drawer, draftsman, mm-hmm. Sheet metal mechanic for a while. So I thought that was the direction I wanted to go. But, you know, as it turned out, you know, you fall in love with the Army, you fall in love with the people. I mean, the Army is really about people. So you fall in love with the people and just, you know, ended up staying for a very long time.
Yeah. So to give our listeners out there a pictorial, what was the uniform that you wore when you first joined the Army in 1975?
So 1975 was the cotton fatigues. Mm-hmm. And of course, you know, the cotton fatigues was, you know, we'd send them into the cleaners and get them starched. You know, they were heavy starched. And, you know, of course, it was probably at, you know, 1976, 77, you know, we went through a uniform change to the permanent press fatigues. So now you didn't have to starch. But of course, you know, we couldn't break the mindset of starch. So everybody was still starching their uniforms back then.
Yeah, that took another two and a half decades to break the mindset of starch.
Yeah, that's right. So, and then, of course, you know, the battle dress uniform, the BDU was, you know, came out, you know, in the late 70s. And, you know, of course, we've gone through lots of different iterations of change, you know, through that uniform and since then. So.
What hasn't changed? I mean, you got to see from 1975 and still in your capacity today as the Vice President of NCO and Soldier Programs, you're closely associated with the Army every day and have a phenomenal working relationship with the leadership over there. So someone that has a vantage point that you've had for the last four decades, what's the same?
Yeah, so what's the same is the young people that volunteer to serve our nation every day and wear the uniform of a soldier. I mean, that's one of those things that's enduring, and we should all be very proud that we continue to have young people out there that continue to step up and volunteer and want to serve our nation as a soldier. The other thing too that I find that's very enduring is leadership. And you know, when you look at you know, all the different units and organizations out there, and while, you know, we're continuing to evolve and advance in technology, particularly across not only now the you know, the land, the air, the sea domains, you know, we've got space and cyberspace now that the Army is very much engaged in. So, you know, across all of those, it really comes down to having high quality people and high quality leaders. And I think that, you know, as of course I'm probably a little biased, but I have to be very proud of your non-commissioned officer, warrant officer education systems that are out there. But I've watched our Army evolve and change. And we've just continued to get better year after year after year. And, you know, the phenomenal leaders right now that we are growing to serve at the senior levels are just unmatched, you know, compared to where we were, you know, 40 years ago.
Yeah, and I have to, the same thing for me. Soldiers today are much better than I was when I joined back in 1989, a far stretch from 1975, of course, but I have to agree to you. We are blessed as an organization and as a United States Army to have the members and the soldiers that we have, because they are a phenomenal, phenomenal group of young men and women. So you mentioned leadership. And in four decades, you've obviously had an opportunity to be mentored by hundreds of leaders, I'm sure, all with different leadership traits and styles. And if there was one thing that you have learned about becoming a great leader that you could share with our listening audience, what would it be?
Yeah, so for me, I guess, as I think about this, and I've had this discussion, particularly for NCO induction ceremonies, and, you know, for those, you know, young emerging leaders, young professionals, as they make that transition from being a specialist to becoming a sergeant. You know, it one of the things that really helped me was, you know, back then, you know, we had the 11 principles of leadership. Today, you know, we got the 7 principles of leadership. You've got lots of, you know, traits of a leader. You know, what are the different traits that are out there? And of course, you know, I've studied all of those. And, you know, even to this day, you know, it's, you know, I still remember, you know, the traits of a leader, you know, bearing, courage, dependability, decisiveness, endurance, enthusiasm, honor, integrity, initiative, judgment, justice, loyalty, tact, unselfishness, you know, and you know, we talked about this. And,
yeah.
And you know, so as I think about it, I mean, those traits are all very important. And to be a great leader, you have to have a little bit of, you know, goodness in all those different categories.
Yeah, so it's not one thing.
Huh? It's not, you know, and when you look at, you know, like unselfishness, you know, being humble, and, you know, we talked about being humble and, you know, being, you know, caring about the position that you hold, and really looking at the responsibility that a young leader is given, you know, for their piece of the Army. And, you know, I've had lots of discussions about, you know, the tie between standards, because we are a standards-based Army, and how does standards tie into disciplined organizations? And it really, it all starts, you know, at the sergeant level. And as I tell, you know, brand new lieutenants that are just in the process of being commissioned, and, you know, they're anxious to get out there and take over their first platoon, you know, as I tell them, you know, one of the most important things, if not the most important thing they're going to do within that platoon, is to grow sergeants.
That's right.
You know, because sergeants are the bench. I mean, that's that next generation of leaders that we're going to grow up within that platoon. And that officer and that platoon sergeant, I mean, that platoon level leader team is the ones that really grow and develop you know, our leaders for the future. So, yeah, so I think that, you know, you look at, you know, the traits of a leader. You know, the other thing that I've always talked about was, you know, when you look at the principles of leadership, you know, back then it was 11, today it's 7. But one of the things that's still enduring through all those years is about leading by your own example.
Yeah.
You know, lead by example, set the example. I mean, that piece of it in my mind is also all-encompassing, because it's not just while you're in uniform, at work, during the duty day, but it also encompasses, you know, how you carry yourself, how you speak to people, you know, how you dress in civilian clothes after the duty hours, you know, how you look, you know, when you're 500 miles away from a military base, you know, how do you carry yourself, how you present yourself, how do you talk and communicate on social media? So in my mind, leading by example, setting the example, is one of those things that, you know, when you make that transition to become a sergeant, and from that point on, for the rest of your career, however long you serve, you know, it really comes down to setting the example for those soldiers that are going to follow in your footsteps.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, we've all been moved towards those people throughout our careers too. You know, that non-commissioned officer, or even that officer that you look at and say, I want to emulate them, you know, because they're out front leading by example and doing the right things every day. So I was looking for the secret sauce there, the magic pill. So I guess there's not. You got to be good to be able to do a good good job in a little bit of all those areas, which is really good advice, because you're exactly right. There is no magic pill. There's no secret sauce. Leadership isn't born. It's built over time, and it takes hard work to be and maintain that level of leadership.
Yeah, and I encourage, you know, young people out there as they make that transition to step into leadership roles, you know, don't focus on just one trait of a leader. Don't focus on one, one principle of leadership. Look at all of them and really understand, you know, what a leader needs to be, know, and do.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, you mentioned that you've been mentored by many leaders out there. And, you know, every generation has its heroes. Every person in life as their heroes. I mean, I have my personal heroes and people I look back and I wanted to emulate and be just like. Can you share with our listening audience today, throughout your career, someone or a story or something that had an impact on you and helped you define the leader you were?
Yeah. Okay. Great question. So, and honestly, you know, as I think back, what set the foundation for me for a successful career. And really everything that I learned in my first 5 or 6 years really set the foundation for the success that I had as a platoon sergeant, a first sergeant, a command sergeant major, all the way through serving as a sergeant major in the Army. And, you know, as I look back at, the first duty station that I was assigned right after initial entry training was the 1st Cavalry Division at Fort Hood, Texas. And, you know, and when I got there in November of 1975, you know, 1st Cav was going through that transition from being an air cav division in Vietnam to the ground maneuver division that it is today. And the 2nd Battalion, 8th Cav was an experimental unit. And of course, most of the people that were assigned to that battalion were handpicked, the leaders. So I was very fortunate going in there. And, you know, I was assigned as an armor cavalry soldier. I was assigned to the headquarters tank section in the headquarters company.
And so what kind of tanks did you have back then?
So they were M60 A1s, straight A1s.
Straight A1s, yeah.
And it was interesting, you know, as a young soldier there, you know, and one of the opportunities that I had as a specialist, as I went up through the ranks pretty quick, but yeah. As a specialist, the Army National Guard in the Dallas-Fort Worth area was turning in their M48 A3s and drawing straight M60s. And so there was a group of us that were set up there to teach them classes. You know, and of course, yeah. I was, you yeah. know, they were transitioning from a 90mm tank cannon to the 105. So my job was to teach them, you know, clearing, disassembly, assembly, function check of the breech block on the 105 tank cannon. So, yeah, so lots of memories, you know, those early days.
Lots of memories. Now, if you want to see one of those, you can go to your local Legion or
yeah, that's right,
Legion or Post
piece.
VFW. They're out front there. But I believe there's still some nations around the world still using them.
No, exactly right. I mean, there's still nations out there that use the M4, I mean, for that matter. So,
yeah.
But, you know, as I look at the people, I mean, obviously, you know, that the first 2.5 years there with the 1st Cav Division was very special. All the non-commissioned officers, you know, mid-grade senior NCOs were all Vietnam era veterans. So they were very experienced. And of course, they had the combat patch and, you know, and shared a lot of experiences. So probably, you know, then I left there and went to Germany, you know, spent 3 years. And So I had the opportunity in that first 6 years to go into really a model unit, a perfect unit, to going into a unit that was really very poor, low morale, low standards. But the great advantage of having the diversity of seeing kind of great units and then not so great units was the impact that leadership can make. And, you know, as I look back at, you know, all my platoon sergeants in those units, I watched them, you know, really rebuild those units and organizations. And specifically, I mean, I'll just kind of mention, I mean, I had, you know, 2 great platoon sergeants, you know, when I went into that unit that were new, you know, Skip Ashton as a platoon sergeant, you know, Dick Morgan, who came in right after that, the first sergeant Gary Pastine, and, you know, at that time, Captain, you know, Jim Bessler was a company commander. It was amazing to watch those leaders transform a unit that was, you know, actually not very good, low morale, yeah. You know, the discipline, the standards. But I watched them methodically changed the atmosphere of that organization. So I learned very, very young as a young sergeant that leadership makes a difference. I mean, That's the difference between having, you know, good units or mediocre units and then having great units. And it's really about leading by example. It's about teaching. And that's probably one of the other things that I learned early on was that, to be a great leader, you got to be a teacher. And, you take all the experiences that you have and you give that back. And that's one of the things that, now serving here as the vice president for NCO and Soldier Programs, I've always considered myself a teacher and to take the things that I've learned through my career, through those, diverse assignments that you've been on or the deployments, and you take those experiences and you give it to that next generation of leader so that they can start at a much higher level. You know, their entry level coming in to doing a mission is much, much further ahead than what you were. And of course, if you look at the Army over the last 40 years, that's the reason why we've evolved. And the Army that we were 40 years ago compared to the Army that we are today, it's because of leaders out there that have continued to pass that baton, that knowledge onto the next generation of leader.
Yeah, that's great advice. And Sergeant Major, you know that you served your nation for over 3 decades, and then you continue the service as the vice president of the Association of the United States Army. It's a long time. And so I got to ask, because I know our listeners out there are wondering, because I'm wondering myself, what's next for Ken Preston and the Preston family?
You never say never. Just as I did when I left the Army, my intent was to, I demoted myself to private, went back to the farm, to get the farm up and running, look after mom and dad. So now as I transition from here, I'm demoting myself back to private. I'm going back to the farm and I've got three adult children with, they've all got families. I've got great daughters-in-laws and, lots of grandkids. So
how many grandkids?
Eight grandkids. So five boys, three girls, five boys. So
that's a full-time job in itself right there.
But they're all amazing, young people that looking forward to the opportunities of the future. And, of course, you want to be part of that. You want to be part of, helping to shape and, give them, encouragement about, the future to come. But at the same time, I want to continue to serve. I'm still young and still ready to, continue to serve and do things and, whatever I can do to continue to support the Army, our soldiers, our Army civilians, our families. I continue to want to do that as well.
Well, ladies and gentlemen, there you heard it from Sergeant Major retired in the Army, Ken Preston. I don't think this is going to be the last time we hear from him. I'm sure that he'll continue on. Serving our great Army and our great nation.
Yep, but just as a thought, because I am staying on as a senior fellow.
Oh, good.
And so I will. I mean, that's General Hamm says he's not going to let the leash go. So I will stay on as a senior fellow. So I get to be the, as I call it, the fireman's axe behind the glass window. That in case of emergency, you bust the glass, you pull out the fireman's axe, and.
And save the new vice president for NCO and Soldier Programs when he messes stuff
up.
Right?
I'm just a backup.
Well, ladies and gentlemen, you heard me say it earlier. Every generation has its heroes. And today, I got to interview one of mine. Ken, thank you for your decades of service and sacrifice to our Army and our association. And thank you for being one of my mentors. God bless you. And we wish you the best of luck. And I know that the Army, speaking for them, there's always a home for you there because you're a soldier for life. And this association, there's always a home here for you in the association. Good luck to you. Godspeed.
All right. Thank you.
To all our listeners, be sure to subscribe to Army Matters on Apple Podcasts and everywhere podcasts are found. Keep it locked for all Army Matters and for next week's episode with Army Real Talk. Thanks again, SMA. Army Strong.